Chapter 8. I was jarred out of useless brain cudgeling by an explosion, a sharp crack, a bass rumble, then a whoosh of reduced pressure. I bounced to my feet. Anyone who has ever depended on a spacesuit is never again indifferent to a drop in pressure. I gasped, "What the deuce?" Then I added, "Whoever is on watch had better get on the ball, or we'll all be breathing thin cold stuff." No oxygen outside, I was sure, or rather the astronomers were, and I didn't want to test it. Then I said, "Somebody bombing us? I hope. Or was it an earthquake?" This was not an idle remark. That Scientific American article concerning summer on Pluto had predicted sharp, isostatic readjustments as the temperature rose, which is a polite way of saying, "Hold your hats, here comes the chimney." I was in an earthquake once, in Santa Barbara. I didn't need a booster shot to remember what every Californian knows, and others learn in one lesson. When the ground does a jig, get outdoors. Only, I couldn't. I spent 2 minutes checking whether adrenaline had given me the strength to jump 18 feet instead of 12. It hadn't. That was all I did for a half hour, if you don't count nail-biting. Then I heard my name.
Kip! Oh, Kip!
Pee-wee! I screamed. Here! Pee-wee! Silence for an eternity of 3 heartbeats.
Kip!
Down here!
Kip, are you down this hole?
Yes! Can't you see me?
I saw her head against the light above.
I can now. Oh, Kip, I'm so glad!
Then why are you crying? So am I.
I'm not crying. Oh, Kip! Kip!
Can you get me out?
She surveyed that drop.
Stay where you are!
Don't go away!
She already had. She wasn't gone 2 minutes. It merely seemed like a week. Then she was back, and the darling had a nylon rope.
Grab on!
Wait a sec. How is it fastened?
I'll pull you up.
No, you won't, or we'll both be down here. Find somewhere to belay it.
I can lift you.
Belay it! Hurry!
She left again, leaving an end in my hands. Shortly, I heard very faintly,
"Unbelay!"
I shouted,
"Testing!"
and took up the slack. I put my weight on it. It held.
"Climbing!"
I yelled, and followed the final G up the hole and caught it. She flung herself on me, an arm around my neck, one around Madame Pompadour, and both of mine around her. She was even smaller and skinnier than I remembered.
"Oh, Kip! It's been just awful!"
I patted her bony shoulder blades.
"Yeah, I know. What do we do now? Where's wh—"
I started to say, "Where's Wormface?" But she burst into tears.
"Kip, I think she's dead!"
My mind skidded. I was a bit stir-crazy anyhow.
"Huh? Who?"
She looked as amazed as I was confused.
"Why, the mother thing!"
"Oh." I felt a flood of sorrow. "But, honey, are you sure? She was talking to me all right up to the last, and I didn't die."
"What in the world are you talk—" "Oh, I don't mean then, Kip. I mean, now."
"Huh? She was here?"
"Of course. Where else?"
Now that's a silly question. It's a big universe. I had decided long ago that the mother thing couldn't be here, because Jock had brushed off the subject. I reasoned that Jock would either have said that she was here, or have invented an elaborate lie, for the pleasure of lying. Therefore, she wasn't on his list. Perhaps he had never seen her, save as a bulge under my suit. I was so sure of my logic that it took a long moment to throw off prejudice and accept fact. "Pee-wee," I said, gulping. "I feel like I'd lost my own mother. Are you sure?"
"Feel as if,"
she said automatically.
"I'm not sure, but she's outside, so she must be dead."
"Wait a minute. If she's outside, she's wearing a spacesuit, isn't she?"
"Oh, no. She hasn't had one. Not since they destroyed her ship.
I was getting more confused. How did they bring her in here?
They just sacked her and sealed her and carried her in. Kip, what do we do now?
I knew several answers, all of them wrong. I had already considered them during my stretch in jail. Where is Wormface? Where are all the Wormfaces?
Oh, all dead, I think.
I hope you're right. I looked around for a weapon and never saw a hallway so bare. My toy dagger was only 18 feet away, but I didn't feel like going back down for it. What makes you think so? Pee-wee had reason to think so. The mother thing didn't look strong enough to tear paper, but what she lacked in beef, she made up in brains. She had done what I had tried to do, reasoned out a way to take them all on. She had not been able to hurry, because her plan had many factors, all of which had to mesh at once, and many of them she could not influence. She had to wait for the breaks. First, she needed a time when there were few worm faces around. The base was indeed a large supply dump and spaceport and transfer point, but it did not need a large staff. It had been unusually crowded the few moments I had seen it, because our ship was in. Second, it also had to be when no ships were in, because she couldn't cope with a ship. She couldn't get at it. Third, H-hour had to be while the worm faces were feeding. They all ate together when there were few enough not to have to use their mess hall and relays. Crowded around one big tub and sopping it up, I gathered. A scene out of Dante. That would place all her enemies on one target, except possibly one or two on engineering or communication watches. Wait a minute, I interrupted. You said they were all dead?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen any.
Hold everything until I find something to fight with.
But...
First things first, Pee-wee. Saying that I was going to find a weapon wasn't finding one. That corridor had nothing but more holes like the one I had been down, which was why Pee-wee had looked for me there. It was one of the few places where she had not been allowed to wander at will. Jock had been correct on one point. Pee-wee, and the mother thing, had been star prisoners, allowed all privileges except freedom, whereas Jock and Tim and myself had been third-class prisoners and or soup bones. It fitted the theory that Pee-wee and the mother thing were hostages rather than ordinary PWs. I didn't explore those holes after I looked down one and saw a human skeleton. Maybe they got tired of tossing food to him. When I straightened up, Pee-wee said,
What are you shaking about?
Nothing. Come on.
I want to see.
Pee-wee, every second counts, and we've done nothing but yak. Come on, stay behind me. I kept her from seeing the skeleton. A major triumph over that little curiosity box, although it probably would not have affected her much. Pee-wee was sentimental only when it suited her. Stay behind me had the correct gallant sound, but it was not based on reason. I forgot that attack could come from the rear. I should have said, follow me and watch behind us. She did anyway. I heard a squeal and whirled around to see a worm face with one of those camera-like things aimed at me. Even though Tim had used one on me, I didn't realize what it was. For a moment, I froze. But not Pee-wee. She launched herself through the air, attacking with both hands and both feet in the gallant audacity and utter recklessness of a kitten. That saved me. Her attack would not have hurt anything but another kitten, but it mixed him up so that he didn't finish what he was doing, namely paralyzing or killing me. He tripped over her and went down. And I stomped him. With my bare feet, I stomped him, landing on that lobster horror head with both feet. His head crunched. It felt awful. It was like jumping on a strawberry box. It splintered and crunched and went to pieces. I cringed at the feel, even though I was in an agony to fight, to kill. I trampled worms and hopped away, feeling sick. I scooped up Pee-wee and pulled her back, as anxious to get clear as I had been to join battle seconds before. I hadn't killed it. For an awful moment, I thought I was going to have to wade back in. Then I saw that while it was alive, it did not seem aware of us. It flopped like a chicken freshly chopped, then quieted and began to move purposefully. But it couldn't see. I had smashed its eyes and maybe its ears, but certainly those terrible eyes.
It felt around the floor carefully, then got to its feet, still undamaged, except that its head was a crushed ruin. It stood still, braced tripod style by that third appendage, and felt the air. I pulled us back farther. It began to walk, not toward us, or I would have screamed. It moved away, ricocheted off a wall, straightened out, and went back the way we had come. It reached one of those holes they used for prisoners, walked into it, and dropped. I sighed, and realized that I had been holding Pee-wee too tightly to breathe. I put her down.
There's your weapon!
Huh?
On the floor, just beyond where I dropped Madame Pompadour. The gadget.
She went over, picked up her dolly, brushed away bits of ruined worm face, then took the camera-like thing and handed it to me.
Be careful! Don't point it toward you. Or me.
Pee-wee, don't you ever have an attack of nerves?
Sure I do, when I have leisure for it, which isn't now. Do you know how to work it?
No. Do you?
I think so. I've seen them, and the mother thing told me about them.
She took it, handling it casually, but not pointing it at either of us.
These holes on top. Uncover one of them. It stuns. If you uncover them all, it kills. To make it work, you push it here.
She did, and a bright blue light shot out, splashed against the wall.
The light doesn't do anything. It's for aiming. I hope there wasn't anybody on the other side of that wall. No, I hope there was. You know what I mean.
It looked like a cockeyed 35mm camera with a lead lens, one built from an oral description. I took it, being very cautious where I pointed it, and looked at it. Then I tried it, full power, by mistake. The blue light was a shaft in the air, and the wall where it hit glowed and began to smoke. I shut it off.
You wasted power. You may need it later.
Well, I had to try it. Come on, let's go. Pee-wee glanced at her Mickey Mouse watch, and I felt irked that it had apparently stood up when my fancy one had not.
There's very little time, Kip. Can't we assume that only this one escaped?
What? We certainly cannot. Until we're sure that all of them are dead, we can't do anything else. Come on.
But, well, I'll lead. I know my way around. You don't.
No.
Yes.
So we did it her way. She led and carried the blue light projector, while I covered the rear and wished for a third eye, like a worm face. I couldn't argue that my reflexes were faster when they weren't, and she knew more than I did about our weapon. But it's graveling, just the same. The base was huge. Half that mountain must have been honeycombed. We did it at a fast trot, ignoring things as complicated as museum exhibits, and twice as interesting, simply making sure that no worm face was anywhere. Pee-wee ran with the weapon at the ready, talking 20 to the dozen, and urging me on. Besides an almost empty base, no ships in, and the worm faces feeding, the Mother Thing's plan required that all this happen shortly before a particular hour of the Plutonian night. Why? I panted.
So she could signal her people, of course.
But... I shut up. I had wondered about the Mother Thing's people, but didn't even know as much about her as I did about Wormface, except that she was everything that made her the Mother Thing. Now she was dead. Pee-wee said that she was outside without a spacesuit, so she was surely dead. That little soft warm thing wouldn't last 2 seconds in that ultra-arctic weather, not to mention suffocation and lung hemorrhage. I choked up. Of course, Pee-wee might be wrong. I had to admit that she rarely was, but this might be one of the times, in which case we would find her. But if we didn't find her, she was outside and... Pee-wee, do you know where my spacesuit is?
Huh? Of course! Right next to where I got this.
She patted the nylon rope, which she had coiled around her waist and tied with a bow. Then the second we are sure that we've cleaned out the worm faces, I'm going outside and look for her.
Yes, yes! But we've got to find my suit, too. I'm going with you.
No doubt she would. Maybe I could persuade her to wait in the tunnel out of that bone-freezing wind. Pee-wee, why did she have to send her message at night? To a ship in a rotation period orbit? Or is there... My words were chopped off by a rumble, The floor shook in that loose-bearing vibration that frightens people and animals alike. We stopped dead.
What was that?
I swallowed. Unless it's part of this rumpus the Mother Thing planned.
It isn't, I think.
It's a quake.
An earthquake?
A Pluto quake. Pee-wee, we've got to get out of here! I wasn't thinking about where. You don't in a quake. Pee-wee gulped.
We can't bother with earthquakes. We haven't time. Hurry, Kip, hurry!
She started to run, and I followed, gritting my teeth. If Pee-wee could ignore a quake, so could I, though it's like ignoring a rattlesnake in bed. Pee-wee, Mother Thing's people, is their ship in orbit around Pluto?
What? Oh, no, no. They're not in a ship.
Then why at night? Something about the Heaviside layers here? How far away is their base? I was wondering how far a man could walk here. We had done almost 40 miles on the moon. Could we do 40 blocks here? Or even 40 yards? You could insulate your feet, probably. But that wind. Pee-wee, they don't live here, do they?
What? Don't be silly. They have a nice planet of their own. Kip, if you keep asking foolish questions, we'll be too late. Shut up and listen.
I shut up. What follows I got in snatches as we ran, and some of it later. When the Mother Thing had been captured, she had lost ship, space clothing, communicator, everything. Wormface had destroyed it all. There had been treachery, capture through violation of truce while parleying.
He grabbed her when they were supposed to be under a king's axe,
was Pee-wee's indignant description.
And that's not fair. He had promised.
Treachery would be as natural in Wormface as venom in a Gila monster. I was surprised that the Mother Thing had risked a palaver with him. It left her a prisoner of ruthless monsters equipped with ships that made ours look like horseless carriages, weapons which started with a death ray and ended heaven knows where, plus bases, organization, supplies. She had only her brain and her tiny soft hands. Before she could use the rare combination of circumstances necessary to have any chance at all, she had to replace her communicator. I think of it as her radio, but it was more than that. And she had to have weapons. The only way she could get them was to build them. She had nothing, not a bobby pin, only that triangular ornament with spirals engraved on it. To build anything, she had to gain access to a series of rooms which I would describe as electronics labs. Not that they looked like the bench where I jiggered with electronics, but electron pushing has its built-in logic. If electrons are to do what you want them to, components have to look pretty much a certain way, whether built by humans, worm faces, or the Mother Thing. A waveguide gets its shape from the laws of nature. An inductance has its necessary geometry, no matter who the technician is. So it looked like an electronics lab, a very good one. It had gear I did not recognize, but which I felt I could understand if I had time. I got only a glimpse. The Mother Thing spent many, many hours there. She would not have been permitted there, even though she was a prisoner at large with freedom in most ways and anything she wanted, including private quarters with Pee-wee. I think that Wormface was afraid of her. Even though she was a prisoner, he did not want to offend her unnecessarily. She got the run of their shops by baiting their cupidity. Her people had many things that Wormface's had not. Gadgets, inventions, conveniences. She began by inquiring why they did a thing this way rather than another way, which was so much more efficient. A tradition or religious reasons? When asked what she meant, she looked helpless and protested that she couldn't explain, which was a shame because it was simple and so easy to build, too. Under close chaperonage, she built something. The gadget worked. Then something else. Presently, she was in the labs daily, making things for her captors, things that delighted them. She always delivered. The privilege depended on it. But each gadget involved parts she needed herself.
She sneaked bits and pieces into her pouch,
Pee-wee told me.
They never knew exactly what she was doing. She would use five of a thing, and the sixth would go into her pouch.
Her pouch?
Of course. That's where she hid the brain the time she and I swiped the ship. Didn't you know?
I didn't know she had a pouch.
Well, neither did they. They watched to see she didn't carry anything out of the shop. And she never did. Not where it showed.
Pee-wee, is the mother thing a marsupial?
Huh? Like possums? You don't have to be a marsupial to have a pouch. Look at squirrels. They have pouches in their cheeks.
Yes.
She sneaked a bit now, and a bit then. And I swiped things, too. During rest time, she worked on them in our room.
The mother thing had not slept all the time we had been on Pluto. She worked long hours publicly, making things for worm faces. A stereo telephone no bigger than a pack of cigarettes. A tiny beetle-like arrangement that crawled all over anything it was placed on and integrated the volume. Many other things. But during hours set apart for rest, she worked for herself, usually in darkness. Those tiny fingers busy as a blind watchmaker's. She made 2 bombs, and a long-distance communicator and beacon. I didn't get all this tossed over Pee-wee's shoulder while we raced through the base. She simply told me that the mother thing had managed to build a radio beacon and had been responsible for the explosion I had felt, and that we must hurry, hurry, hurry. "Pee-wee," I said, panting. "What's the rush? If the mother thing is outside, I want to bring her in. Her body, I mean. But you act as if we had a deadline."
"We do!"
The communicator beacon had to be placed outside at a particular local time. The Plutonian day is about a week. The astronomers were right again. So that the planet itself would not blanket the beam. But the mother thing had no spacesuit. They had discussed having Pee-wee suit up, go outside, and set the beacon. It had been so designed that Pee-wee need only trigger it, but that depended on locating Pee-wee's spacesuit, then breaking in, and getting it after the worm faces were disposed of. They had never located it. The mother thing had said serenely, singing confident notes that I could almost hear ringing in my head,
"Never mind, dear. I can go out and set it myself."
"Mother thing, you can't!"
Pee-wee had protested.
"It's cold out there!"
"I shan't be long."
"You won't be able to breathe."
"It won't be necessary for so short a time."
That settled it. In her own way, the mother thing was as hard to argue with as Wormface. The bombs were built. The beacon was built. A time approached when all factors would match. No ship expected. Few worm faces. Pluto faced the right way. Feeding time for the staff. And they still did not know where Pee-wee's suit was, if it had not been destroyed. The mother thing resolved to go ahead.
"But she told me, just a few hours ago when she let me know that today was the day, that if she did not come back in 10 minutes or so, that she hoped I could find my suit and trigger the beacon, if she hadn't been able to."
Pee-wee started to cry.
"That was the first time she admitted that she wasn't sure she could do it."
"Pee-wee, stop it. Then what?"
"I waited for the explosions. They came, right together. And I started to search places I hadn't been allowed to go. But I couldn't find my suit. Then I found you, and... Oh, Kip, she's been out there almost an hour."
She looked at her watch.
"There's only about 20 minutes left. If the beacon isn't triggered by then, she's had all her trouble and died for... Nothing! She wouldn't like that."
"Where's my suit?" We found no more worm faces. Apparently there was only one on duty while the others fed. Pee-wee showed me a door, airlock type, behind which was the feeding chamber. The bomb may have cracked that section, for gas-tight doors had closed themselves when the owners were blown to bits. We hurried past. Logical as usual, Pee-wee ended our search at my spacesuit. It was one of more than a dozen human-type suits. I wondered how much soup those ghouls ate. Well, they wouldn't eat again. I wasted no time. I simply shouted, "Hi, Oscar!" and started to suit up.
"Where you been, chum?"
Oscar seemed in perfect shape. Fat's suit was next to mine, and Tim's next to it. I glanced at them as I stretched Oscar out, wondering whether they had equipment I could use. Pee-wee was looking at Tim's suit.
"Maybe I can wear this."
It was much smaller than Oscar, which made it only 9 sizes too big for Pee-wee.
Don't be silly. It'd fit you like socks on a rooster. Help me. Take off that rope, coil it, and clip it to my belt.
You won't need it. The mother thing planned to take the beacon out the walkway about 100 yards and sit it down. If she didn't manage it, that's all you do. Then twist the stud on top.
Don't argue. How much time?
Yes, Kip. 18 minutes.
Those winds are strong. I may need the line. The mother thing didn't weigh much. If she had been swept off, I might need a rope to recover her body. Hand me that hammer off Fat's suit.
Right away.
I stood up. It felt good to have Oscar around me. Then I remembered how cold my feet got walking in from the ship. I wish I had asbestos boots. Pee-wee looked startled.
Wait right here.
She was gone before I could stop her. I went on sealing up while I worried. She hadn't even stopped to pick up the projector weapon. Shortly I said, "Tight, Oscar?"
"Tight, boy."
"Chin valve, okay. Blood color, okay. Radio, I wouldn't need it. Water, the tank was dry. No matter, I wouldn't have time to grow thirsty. I worked the chin valve, making the pressure low, because I knew that pressure outdoors was quite low. Pee-wee returned with what looked like ballet slippers for a baby elephant. She leaned close to my faceplate and shouted,
"They wear these! Can you get them on?"
It seemed unlikely, but I forced them over my feet like badly fitting socks. I stood up and found that they improved traction. They were clumsy, but not hard to walk in. A minute later, we were standing at the exit of the big room I had first seen. Its airlock doors were closed now as a result of the Mother Thing's other bomb, which she had placed to blow out the gate valve panels in the tunnel beyond. The bomb in the feeding chamber had been planted by Pee-wee, who had then ducked back to their room. I don't know whether the Mother Thing timed the two bombs to go off together, or triggered them by remote control, nor did it matter. They had made a shambles of Wormface's fancy base. Pee-wee knew how to waste air through the airlock. When the inner door opened, I shouted, "Time?"
14 minutes.
She held up her watch. "Remember what I said. Just stay here. If anything moves, blue light it first and ask questions afterwards."
"I remember."
I stepped in and closed the inner door, found the valve in the outer door, waited for pressure to equalize. The 2 or 3 minutes it took that big lock to bleed off, I spent in glum thought. I didn't like leaving Pee-wee alone. I thought all worm faces were dead, but I wasn't sure. We had searched hastily. One could have zigged when we zagged. They were so fast. Besides that, Pee-wee had said,
"I remember,"
when she should have said,
"Okay, Kip, I will."
A slip of the tongue? That flea-hopping mind made slips only when it wanted to. There is a world of difference between Roger and Wilco. Besides, I was doing this for foolish motives. Mostly I was going out to recover the Mother Thing's body. Folly, because after I brought her in, she would spoil. It would be kinder to leave her in natural deep freeze. But I couldn't bear that. It was cold out there, and I couldn't leave her out in the cold. She had been so little and warm, so alive. I had to bring her in where she could get warm. You're in bad shape when your emotions force you into acts which you know are foolish. Worse still, I was doing this in a reckless rush because the Mother Thing had wanted that beacon set before a certain second, now only 12 minutes away, maybe 10. Well, I'd do it, but what sense was it? Say her home star is close by. Oh, say it's Proxima Centauri, and the worm faces came from somewhere farther. Even if her beacon works, it still takes over 4 years for her SOS to reach her friends. This might have been okay for the Mother Thing. I had an impression that she lived a very long time. Waiting a few years for rescue might not bother her. But Pee-wee and I were not creatures of her sort. We'd be dead before that speed of light message crawled to Proxima Centauri. I was glad that I had seen Pee-wee again, but I knew what was in store for us. Death. In days, weeks, or months at most, from running out of air, or water, or food. Or a worm-faced ship might land before we died, which meant one unholy sabbat of a fight in which, if we were lucky, we would die quickly. No matter how you figured, planting that beacon was merely carrying out the deceased's last wishes, words you hear at funerals.
sentimental folly.
The outer door started to open. Ave, mother thing. Nos moriturii. It was cold out there, biting cold, even though I was not yet in the wind. The glow panels were still working, and I could see that the tunnel was a mess. The 24 fractional pressure stops had ruptured like eardrums. I wondered what sort of bomb could be haywired from stolen parts, kept small enough to conceal 2 in a body pouch along with some sort of radio rig, and nevertheless have force enough to blow out those panels. The blast had rattled my teeth, several hundred feet away in solid rock. The first 12 panels were blown inwards. Had she set it off in the middle of the tunnel? A blast that big would fling her away like a feather. She must have planted it there, then come inside and triggered it, then gone back through the lock, just as I had. That was the only way I could see it. It got colder every step. My feet weren't too cold yet. Those clumsy mucklucks were okay. The worm faces understood insulation. Oscar, you got the fires burning?
Roaring, chum. It's a cold night.
You're telling me? Just beyond the outermost burst panel, I found her. She had sunk forward, as if too tired to go on, her arms stretched in front of her, and, on the floor of the tunnel, not quite touched by her tiny fingers, was a small round box, about the size ladies keep powder in on dressing tables. Her face was composed, and her eyes were open, except that nictitating membranes were drawn across, as they had been when I had first seen her in the pasture back of our house, a few days or weeks, or 1,000 years ago. But she had been hurt then, and looked it. Now I half expected her to draw back those inner lids and sing a welcome. I touched her. She was hard as ice, and much colder. I blinked back tears, and wasted not a moment. She wanted that little box placed 100 yards out on the causeway, and the bump on top twisted, and she wanted it done in the next 6 or 7 minutes. I scooped it up. Righto, mother thing! On my way.
Get cracking, chum.
Thank you, dear Kip.
I don't believe in ghosts. I had heard her sing thank you so many times that the notes echoed in my head. A few feet away at the mouth of the tunnel, I stopped. The wind hit me and was so cold that the deathly chill in the tunnel seemed summery. I closed my eyes and counted 30 seconds to give time to adjust to starlight, while I fumbled on the windward side of the tunnel at a slanting strut that anchored the causeway to the mountain, tied my safety line by passing it around the strut and snapping it back on itself. I had known that it was night outside, and I expected the causeway to stand out as a black ribbon against the white snow glittering under a sky full of stars. I thought I would be safer on that windswept way if I could see its edges, which I couldn't by headlamp unless I kept swinging my shoulders back and forth, clumsy and likely to throw me off balance or slow me down. I had figured this carefully. I didn't regard this as a stroll in the garden, not at night, not on Pluto. So I counted 30 seconds and tied my line while waiting for eyes to adjust to starlight. I opened them. And I couldn't see a darn thing. Not a star. Not even the difference between sky and ground. My back was to the tunnel, and the helmet shaded my face like a sunbonnet. I should have been able to see the walkway. Nothing. I turned the helmet and saw something that accounted both for black sky and the quake we had felt. An active volcano. It may have been 5 miles away, or 50, but I could not doubt what it was. A jagged, angry red scar, low in the sky. But I didn't stop to stare. I switched on the headlamp, splashed it on the right-hand windward edge, and started a clumsy trot, keeping close to that side, so that if I stumbled, I would have the entire road to recover in before the wind could sweep me off. That wind scared me. I kept the line coiled in my left hand and paid it out as I went, keeping it fairly taut. The coil felt stiff in my fingers.
The wind not only frightened me, it hurt. It was a cold so intense that it felt like flame. It burned and blasted, then numbed. My right side, getting the brunt of it, began to go, and then my left side hurt more than the right. I could no longer feel the line. I stopped, leaned forward, and got the coil and the light from the headlamp. That's another thing that needs fixing. The headlamp should swivel. The coil was half gone. I had come a good 50 yards. I was depending on the rope to tell me. It was 100-meter climbing line, so when I neared its end, I would be as far out as the mother thing had wanted. Hurry, Kip!
Get cracking, boy! It's cold out here!
I stopped again. Did I have the box? I couldn't feel it, but the headlamp showed my right hand clutched around it. Stay there, fingers! I hurried on, counting steps. 1, 2, 3, 4. When I reached 40, I stopped and glanced over the edge, saw that I was at the highest part where the road crossed the brook, and remembered that it was about midway. That brook, methane was it, was frozen solid, and I knew that the night was cold. There were a few loops of line on my left arm, close enough. I dropped the line, moved cautiously to the middle of the way, eased to my knees and left hand, and started to put the box down. My fingers wouldn't unbend. I forced them with my left hand, got the box out of my fist. That diabolical wind caught it, and I barely saved it from rolling away. With both hands, I set it carefully upright.
Work your fingers, bud. Pound your hands together.
I did so. I could tighten the muscles of my forearms, though it was tearing agony to flex fingers. Clumsily steadying the box with my left hand, I groped for the little knob on top. I couldn't feel it, but it turned easily once I managed to close my fingers on it. I could see it turn. It seemed to come to life, to purr. Perhaps I heard vibration through gloves and up my suit. I certainly couldn't have felt it, not the shape my fingers were in. I hastily let go, got awkwardly to my feet, and backed up so that I could splash the headlamp on it without leaning over. I was through. The mother thing's job was done, and, I hoped, before deadline. If I had had as much sense as the ordinary doorknob, I would have turned and hurried into the tunnel faster than I had come out. But I was fascinated by what it was doing. It seemed to shake itself, and 3 spidery little legs grew out the bottom. It raised up until it was standing on its own little tripod, about 1 foot high. It shook itself again, and I thought the wind would blow it over, but the spidery legs splayed out, seemed to bite into the road's surface, and it was rock firm. Something lifted and unfolded out the top. It opened like a flower until it was about 8 inches across. A finger lifted, an antenna, swung as if hunting, steadied, and pointed at the sky. Then the beacon switched on. I'm sure that is what happened, although all I saw was a flash of light. Parasitic it must have been, for light alone would not have served, even without that volcanic overcast. It was probably some harmless side effect of switching on an enormous pulse of power, something the mother thing hadn't had time, or perhaps equipment or materials, to eliminate or shield. It was about as bright as a peanut photo flash. But I was looking at it. Polarizers can't work that fast. It blinded me. I thought my headlamp had gone out. Then I realized that I simply couldn't see through a big greenish-purple disk of dazzle.
Take it easy, boy. It's just an afterimage. Wait, and it'll go away.
I can't wait. I'm freezing to death.
Hook the line with your forearm where it's clipped to your belt. Pull on it.
I did as Oscar told me, found the line, turned around, started to wind it on both forearms. It shattered. It did not break as you expect rope to break. It shattered like glass. I suppose that is what it was by then. Glass, I mean. Nylon and glass are supercooled liquids. Now I know what supercooled means. But all I knew then was that my last link with life had gone. I couldn't see. I couldn't hear. I was all alone on a bare platform, billions of miles from home, and a wind out of the depths of a frozen hell was bleeding the last life out of a body I could barely feel. And where I could feel, it hurt like fire. Oscar!
I'm here, bud. You can make it. Now, can you see anything?
No.
Look for the mouth of the tunnel. It's got light in it. Switch off your headlamp. Sure you can. It's just a toggle switch. Drag your hand back across the right side of our helmet.
I did.
See anything?
Not yet.
Move your head. Try to catch it in the corner of your eye. The dazzle stays in front, you know. Well?
I caught something that time.
Reddish, wasn't it? Jagged, too. The volcano. Now we know which way we're facing. Turn slowly and catch the mouth of the tunnel as it goes by.
Slowly was the only way I could turn. There it is.
Okay, you're headed home. Get down on your hands and knees and crab slowly to your left. Don't turn, because you want to hang onto that edge and crawl. Crawl toward the tunnel.
I got down. I couldn't feel the surface with my hands, but I felt pressure on my limbs, as if all four were artificial. I found the edge when my left hand slipped over it, and I almost fell off. But I recovered. Am I headed right?
Sure you are. You haven't turned. You've just moved sideways. Can you lift your head to see the tunnel?
Not without standing up.
Don't do that. Try the headlamp again. Maybe your eyes are okay now.
I dragged my hand forward against the right side of the helmet. I must have hit the switch, for suddenly I saw a circle of light, blurred and cloudy in the middle. The edge of the walkway sliced it on the left.
Good boy. No, don't get up. You're weak and dizzy and likely to fall. Start crawling. Count 'em. 300 ought to do it.
I started crawling. Counting. It's a long way, Oscar. You think we can make it?
Of course we can. You think I want to be left out here?
I'd be with you.
Knock off the chatter. You'll make me lose count. 36. 37. 38.
We crawled.
That's 100. Now we double it. 101. 102. 103.
I'm feeling better, Oscar. I think it's getting warmer.
What?
I said I'm feeling a little warmer.
You're not warmer, you blistering idiot. That's freeze to death you're feeling. Crawl faster. Work your chin valve. Get more air. Let me hear that chin valve click.
I was too tired to argue. I chinned the valve 3 or 4 times, felt a blast blistering my face.
I'm stepping up the stroke. Warmer indeed. 109, 110, 111, 112. Pick it up.
At 200, I said I would just have to rest.
No, you don't.
But I've got to. Just a little while.
Like that, huh? You know what happens. What's Pee-wee going to do? She's in there, waiting. She's already scared because you're late. What's she going to do? Answer me.
She's going to try to wear Tim's suit.
Right. In case of duplicate answers, the prize goes to the one postmarked first. How far will she get? You tell me.
To the mouth of the tunnel, I guess. Then the wind will get her.
My opinion exactly. Then we'll have the whole family together. You, me, the mother thing, Pee-wee, Cozy, a family of stiffs.
But...
So start slugging, brother. Slug, 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 205, 206, 207...
I don't remember falling off. I don't even know what the snow felt like. I just remember being glad that the dreadful counting was over and I could rest. But Oscar wouldn't let me.
Kip! Kip! Get up! Climb back on the straight and narrow!
Go away.
I can't go away. I wish I could. Right in front of you. Grab the edge and scramble up. It's only a little farther now.
I managed to raise my head, saw the edge of the walkway in the light of my headlamp about 2 feet above my head. I sank back. It's too high, I said listlessly. Oscar, I think we've had it. He snorted.
So, who was it just the other day cussed out a little bitty girl who was too tired to get up? Commander Comet, wasn't it? Did I get the name right? The scourge of the spaceways? The no-good lazy sky tramp? have spacesuit will travel. Before you go to sleep, Commander, can I have your autograph? I've never met a real live space pirate before. One that goes around hijacking ships and kidnapping little girls.
That's not fair.
Okay, okay. I know when I'm not wanted, but just one thing before I leave. She's got more guts in her little finger than you have in your whole body, you lying, fat, lazy swine. Goodbye. Don't wait up.
Oscar, don't leave me.
Huh? You want help?
Yes.
Well, if it's too high to reach, grab your hammer and hook it over the edge. Pull yourself up.
I blinked. Maybe it would work. I reached down, decided I had the hammer, even though I couldn't feel it, got it loose. Using both hands, I hooked it over the edge above me. I pulled. That silly hammer broke, just like the line. Tool steel, and it went to pieces, as if it had been cast out of type slugs. That made me mad. I heaved myself to a sitting position, got both elbows on the edge, and struggled and groaned and burst into fiery sweat and rolled over onto the road's surface.
That's my boy! Never mind counting, just crawl toward the light!
The tunnel wavered in front of me. I couldn't get my breath, so I kicked the chin valve. Nothing happened. Oscar, the chin valve is stuck! I tried again. Oscar was very slow in answering.
No, pal. The valve isn't stuck. Your air hoses have frozen up. I guess that last batch wasn't as dry as it could have been.
I haven't any air! Again he was slow, but he answered firmly.
Yes, you have. You've got a whole suit full. Plenty for the few feet left.
I'll never make it.
A few feet only. There's the mother thing right ahead of you. Keep moving.
I raised my head and, sure enough, there she was. I kept crawling while she got bigger and bigger. Finally, I said, Oscar, this is as far as I go.
I'm afraid it is. I've let you down. But thanks for not leaving me outside there.
You didn't let me down. You were swell. I just didn't quite make it.
I guess we both didn't quite make it. But we sure let him know that we tried. So long, partner.
So long. Hasta la vista, amigo. I managed to crawl two short steps and collapsed, with my head near the mother thing's head. She was smiling.
Hello, Kip, my son.
I didn't quite make it, mother thing. Sorry.
Oh, but you did make it.
Huh?
Between us, we both made it.
I thought about that for a long time. And Oscar.
And Oscar, of course.
And Pee-wee.
And always, Pee-wee. We've all made it. Now we can rest, dear.
Good night, Mother Thing. It was a darn short rest. I was just closing my eyes, feeling warm and happy that the Mother Thing thought that I had done all right, when Pee-wee started shaking my shoulder. She touched helmets.
Kip! Kip! Get up! Please, get up!
Huh? Why?
Because I can't carry you. I tried, but I can't do it. You're just too big.
I considered it. Of course she couldn't carry me. Where did she get the silly notion that she could? I was twice her size. I'd carry her, just as soon as I caught my breath.
Kip, please get up!
She was crying now, blubbering. Why, sure, honey, I said gently. If that's what you want. I tried, and had a clumsy bad time of it. She almost picked me up. She helped a lot. Once up, she steadied me. She almost did carry me. She got her shoulders under my right arm and kept pushing. Every time we came to one of those blown-out panels, She either helped me step over or simply pushed me through and helped me up again. At last we were in the lock, and she was bleeding air from inside to fill it. She had to let go of me, and I sank down. She turned when the inner door opened, started to say something, then got my helmet off in a hurry. I took a deep breath and got very dizzy, and the lights dimmed. She was looking at me.
You all right now?
Me? Sure. Why shouldn't I be?
Let me help you inside.
I couldn't see why, but she did help, and I needed it. She sat me on the floor near the door, with my back to the wall. I didn't want to lie down.
Kip, I was so scared.
Why? I couldn't see what she was worried about. Hadn't the mother thing said that we had all done all right?
Well, I was. I shouldn't have let you go out.
But the beacon had to be set.
Oh, but... you said it?
Of course. The mother thing was pleased.
I'm sure she would have been.
She was.
Can I do anything? Can I help you out of your suit?
No, not yet. Could you find me a drink of water?
Right away.
She came back and held it for me. I wasn't as thirsty as I had thought. It made me a bit ill. She watched me for some time, then said,
Do you mind if I'm gone a little while? Will you be all right?
Me? Certainly. I didn't feel well. I was beginning to hurt, but there wasn't anything she could do.
I won't be long.
She began clamping her helmet, and I noticed, with detached interest, that she was wearing her own suit. Somehow I had had the impression that she had been wearing Tim's. I saw her head for the lock, and realized where she was going, and why. I wanted to tell her that the mother thing would rather not be inside here, where she might... I didn't want to say spoil, even to myself. But Pee-wee was gone. I don't think she was away more than 5 minutes. I had closed my eyes, and I am not sure. I noticed the inner door open. Through it stepped Pee-wee, carrying the mother thing in her arms like a long piece of firewood. She didn't bend at all. Pee-wee put the mother thing on the floor in the same position I had last seen her, then unclamped her helmet and bawled. I couldn't get up. My legs hurt too much, and my arms. Pee-wee, please, honey. It doesn't do any good. She raised her head.
I'm all through. I won't cry anymore.
And she didn't. We sat there a long time. Pee-wee again offered to help me out of my suit, but when we tried it, I hurt so terribly, especially my hands and my feet, that I had to ask her to stop. She looked worried.
Kip, I'm afraid you... froze them.
Maybe, but there's nothing to do about it now. I winced and changed the subject. Where did you find your suit?
Oh!
She looked indignant, then almost gay.
You'd never guess. Inside Jock's suit.
No, I guess I wouldn't. The purloined letter.
The what?
Nothing. I hadn't realized that old Wormface had a sense of humor. Shortly after that, we had another quake. A bad one. Chandeliers would have jounced if the place had had any, and the floor heaved. Pee-wee squealed.
Oh, that was almost as bad as the last one.
A lot worse, I'd say. That first little one wasn't anything.
No, I mean the one while you were outside.
Was there one then?
Didn't you feel it?
No. I tried to remember. Maybe that was when I fell off in the snow.
You fell off? Kip!
It was all right. Oscar helped me. There was another ground shock. I wouldn't have minded, only it shook me up and made me hurt worse. I finally came out of the fog enough to realize that I didn't have to hurt. Let's see. Medicine pills were on the right, and the codeine dispenser was farthest back. Pee-wee, could I trouble you for some water again?
Of course!
I'm going to take codeine. It may make me sleep. Do you mind?
You ought to sleep if you can. You need it.
I suppose so. What time is it? She told me, and I couldn't believe it. You mean it's been more than 12 hours?
Huh? Since what?
Since this started.
I don't understand, Kip.
She stared at her watch.
It has been exactly 1.5 hours since I found you. Not quite 2 hours since the mother thing set off the bombs.
I couldn't believe that either, but Pee-wee insisted that she was right. The codeine made me feel much better, and I was beginning to be drowsy when Pee-wee said,
Kip, do you smell anything?
I sniffed. Something like kitchen matches?
That's what I mean. I think the pressure is dropping, too. Kip, I think I'd better close your helmet, if you're going to sleep.
All right. You close yours, too?
Yes. I don't think this place is tied any longer.
You may be right. Between explosions and quakes, I didn't see how it could be. But while I knew what that meant, I was too weary and sick, and getting too dreamy from the drug, to worry. Now, or 1 month from now, what did it matter? The mother thing had said everything was okay. Pee-wee clamped us in, we checked radios, and she sat down facing me and the mother thing. She didn't say anything for a long time. Then I heard,
Pee-wee to Junebug.
I read you, Pee-wee.
Kip, it's been fun, mostly, hasn't it?
Huh? I glanced up, saw that the dial said I had about 4 hours of air left. I had had to reduce pressure twice since we closed up, to match falling pressure in the room. Yes, Pee-wee, it's been swell. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. She sighed.
I just wanted to be sure you weren't blaming me. Now go to sleep.
I did almost go to sleep when I saw Pee-wee jump up and my phones came to life.
Kip, something's coming in the door.
I came wide awake, realized what it meant. Why couldn't they have let us be? A few hours anyhow. Pee-wee, don't panic. Move to the far side of the door. You've got your blue light gadget?
Yes.
Pick them off as they come in.
You've got to move, Kip. You're right where they will come.
I can't get up. I hadn't been able to move, not even my arms, for quite a while. Use low power. Then if you brush me, it won't matter. Do what I say. Fast.
Yes, Kip.
She got where she could snipe at them sideways, raised her projector, and waited. The inner door opened. A figure came in. I saw Pee-wee start to nail it, and I called into my radio, Don't shoot! But she was dropping the projector and running forward even as I shouted. They were Mother Thing people. It took 6 of them to carry me, only 2 to carry the Mother Thing. They sang to me soothingly all the time they were rigging a litter. I swallowed another codeine tablet before they lifted me, as even with their gentleness, any movement hurt. It didn't take long to get me into their ship, for they had landed almost at the tunnel mouth, no doubt crushing the walkway. I hoped so. Once I was safely inside, Pee-wee opened my helmet and unzipped the front of my suit.
Kip, aren't they wonderful?
Yes. I was getting dizzier from the drug, but was feeling better. When do we raise ship?
We've already started.
They're taking us home? I'd have to tell Mr. Charton what a big help the codeine was.
Huh? Oh my, no. We're headed for Vega.
I fainted.